Good afternoon, Wrangell. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1 p.m. We have our guest, Chris Buness, in the studio. I almost called you Chris Hatton. And Kim Wickman. And they run the IGAP department at the WCA. So we're going to talk about that. And as always, you can call in anytime during this program to just say hi or ask a question. So, Chris and Kim, thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having us, June.
Yeah. So, let's just get right to it. Tell me a little bit about IGAP. We're going to talk about what programs you all are doing specifically, but just give me a sense of what is the work that you all do? What does it revolve around?
Well, IGAP is a department of the Wrangell Cooperative Association, and our focus is a capacity building program to help educate the tribe and community about what we're working on, which is what folks are going to hear about in a minute.
And give me, when we've talked about some of the stuff you do in the past, you know, it's around solid waste. It's around, what are these specific areas?
Gotcha. Yeah. Solid waste is one of the components of our work plan. We also focus on air quality and water quality, and we are involved with the Stikeen River transboundary mining baseline data collection. And so those are sort of the main focuses that we have, and all of that is approved through the Tribal Council as we create a work plan and a budget for each year.
Okay, absolutely. Yes. So you all, you're a part of the tribe, you know, just like they have their transportation department, they have their IGAP department.
You bet.
Okay, and then let's just get to it. What are some of the programs that people in the community might know you for?
One of our more popular programs, and seems to be more well-known, is our CEDAR program, which is where we are actually testing the water around Shoemaker and Pat's Creek, and we're monitoring for paralytic shellfish poisoning. Every few weeks, we send out a shellfish sample. Every week, we go ahead and do water samples where we're actually actively looking through our microscope to try and find Alexandrium to see, and that's the type of little critter that's going to cause paralytic shellfish poisoning in shellfish. We're a little behind schedule this year. There were some issues with the lab in Sitka, which is where we send all to be processed. And we weren't able to send in any shellfish since probably about December. So now that their lab is up and running again, here in the next 2 weeks, we'll be actually going out to both Shoemaker and Pat's, collecting a full survey of shellfish and going ahead and trying to reestablish our baseline data so that way we can see what our numbers are at, what's harvestable, what's not harvestable.
Okay, and so, yeah, you'll be able to tell us if the butter clams are harvestable, but some other shellfish are or aren't?
Well, butter clams really like to hang on to their toxins. When they take a bite of it, they really like it. It lives inside of them for a very, very long time. So they're usually the ones when we're talking to somebody, the numbers on those have been very high recently. Okay. So there might be something you might want to avoid. Whereas other animals, they will consume it. They'll hang on to it briefly, but they will spit it out very quickly. And so usually cockles, their turnaround is very, very quick. And then you're able to consume them within a few days after their peaks. So usually our big one is we want to make sure people know, okay, if we're starting to see elevated levels, we want to make sure people know that. That gives them the opportunity to, if they want to harvest, to get a sample, get us 5 or 6 of the shellfish that they've sampled. We send it out for testing. Meanwhile, they can process their clams. They can go through, get them cleaned up, and into the freezer. Do not consume them. But we will mail them out for them and then send them the test results so that way they know whether or not their shellfish are okay for them to go ahead and consume.
Okay, so you are not just, you know, we do our baseline data. We'll also get data for individuals if needed. Yeah. That's cool. That's a great service to the community. And I know you said you had some delays with the lab in Sitka, but generally, how often do you try to do this?
Generally, we try and send out samples twice a month.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
And usually they're right on step with everything. Within 2 to 3 days after they receive our sample, we'll have results and are able to issue them out.
Okay. And then you said, you know, the last time you got those results was in December, mm-hmm. and those were saying that they weren't good.
Well, no. The Shoemaker area sample at that point in time said that there was nothing to detect. But again, that was in December, and that was in one place. But another sample that was turned in right around 3.2 mile, those were showing a little bit elevated levels of parallax shellfish poisoning. So even though the samples were there, we don't... People should be starting off with new samples. So if they would like to go ahead and harvest shellfish, they're going to want to start all over again. Maybe avoid what's in the freezer and move on to another set, because we just don't know what happened in that time span.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that makes sense. So we can be expecting your baseline data from that pretty soon. And yeah, and people can bring their own shellfish to get their individual data. Okay, then yeah, that's one that we definitely like know about. People understand that's one of the things you all do. Give me some more.
I guess I could jump in and just talk about the necessity of having ongoing relationships with different entities within Wrangell and in the region, actually. We try to meet quarterly with the Forest Service, the city, and Kim meets with the Healthy Wrangell Coalition. And so we just use that time each quarter to sort of catch each other up on relevant projects. When Amber Alhadad and Roland Howell are like swapped roles there, we made sure we wanted to bring Roland up to speed on what we were doing. So sometimes we meet more frequently, but usually it's once per quarter, and we're in touch with those entities fairly regularly, which is great. For example, with the Forest Service, as I think you remember, mm-hmm. we took part in a visit to Zarembo Island to sort of scope out what was happening with the vehicles that are there, because that's a focus of the Forest Service, but something we're also interested in and would like to help with. Kim's actively involved with the city in terms of outreach when we have maybe, you know, the first stage water watch. So we just help put out their information for them, because we're another can get the word out for them. The Healthy Wrangell Coalition, do you want to speak a little bit about that, Kim?
Basically, it's a group of people who have come together to talk about different health issues. We have the public health nurse who'll come in. We have different people from the hospital who come in. And basically, we all sit down and we kind of go over what each of our programs is, what we're up to. Today I gave an update on the 10-mile pipe. So that way they can spread information to the people who they're involved with. And then if they have surveys they're going to be issuing or any other upcoming events, all that information gets passed to everyone who's at the meeting. And then we, in return, go through and we pass it on to everybody who's connected to us. Mm-hmm. So it's basically just become a very nice way to spread information about different health concerns in Wrangell.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it sounds like a great consortium of just like really varied interests in public health, which is very local, which is cool. Chris, you mentioned Zarembo and possibly cleaning that up. Where does the tribe and IGAP stand with that now?
Obviously, the U.S. Forest Service is the lead. It's they're the ones managing it. It's a concern of ours. Obviously, there are lots of really well-maintained vehicles over there. They're used every season for hunting, which is exactly what we want. But the older ones, that you know, it's time for them to go. We don't generally have funding for such things, but just being aware of what's going on and meeting with them, chatting with them, going over and visiting was insightful for me to sort of keep it on our radar in terms of potential future opportunities and just tracking along with what they're doing, because it's important to us.
Yeah, so the Forest Service is the lead on this, and you'll be seeing what they're doing with it.
You bet.
Yeah, and how you can help.
You bet.
Okay, then let's go to a break real quick, and I just want to remind everybody that if you have a question or you just want to say hi to these ladies, to give us a call. That number is 874-2345. Off air. All right, we are back. The time is 1:11. We have Chris Buness in the studio, as well as Kim Wickman. They are with the IGAP department at the WCA, and we're just learning more about what they do there. So we were talking about monitoring for shellfish poisoning for PSP, and I heard that you took some of the students out with you to help you. Tell us a little bit about that.
There have been some concerns. in kind of the Shoemaker area about the shellfish that people were consuming and whether or not they could possibly have any kind of heavy metals in them, some sort of contamination. And so this was a project that we've been wanting to do, but anything that involves a project involves paperwork. And it was something we kind of wanted to get done a little bit more quickly. And us going out and doing a project, that's one thing. But when we can involve other people in it, it usually means a lot more to everybody who's involved. The last several years, we've actually worked with Winston Davies' class. And we'll take his class out and they'll go capture plankton with us and all this other fun stuff. So we know he's a very strong teacher to work with. Mm-hmm. And so we offered this idea of going out and having his students design an actual project where they would go harvest shellfish. And then we would have them tested for them for heavy metals. And so I went into the classroom for a day and talked to the different kids about what it was exactly we needed to look at. Just with any other research project, you need to be able to recreate your experiment. Mm-hmm. So we sat down and figured out, okay, what would it look like? Are we going to just randomly pick samples? Are we going to go over some sort of a grid pattern? Do we need to measure these things out? You know, does it matter how deep they are? Does it matter what kind of shellfish? And so the kids got to kind of brainstorm and come up with their own design. Mm-hmm. And then the next low tide series, we had about 11 students who drug their poor parents out with them in the middle of a snowstorm to go harvest clams. And they did a great job. Within 45 minutes, we got about 15 samples. And each sample bag was about 5 to 6 clams, depending on the size, of different species. And from there, they went and lived in our office for a little while.
Cool.
The next day, took them back to the classrooms, and the kids actually had to go through and weigh and measure each of the clams, and making sure that, okay, if you pull clams out of bag 1-A, you have to make sure it goes back in that bag. Otherwise, your dad is going to be a little bit wonky. And so it was a lot of fun. We got to really get good and messy on the beach, and then we got to get their classroom good and messy. From there, we froze our clams, and they got shipped off to the state. And then hopefully in the next few months, they'll be able to give us some numbers to determine whether or not these shellfish are actually holding on to any kind of heavy metals.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's fun for you. It's a great resource for them. And, you know, this is a 2-woman team you've got here. You got to have some helpers. You know, and you both are, you know, really educated in what you all do, so it's a good resource for the students. We have an intern here, and I'm glad I have her for some of our manpower. So I'm glad you had Mr. Davies' class. Okay. And then, yeah, so we're going to be finding out about if they have heavy metals in them.
We are.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. What kind of tripped your trigger that might be an issue?
Some sampling had been done years ago in the same area where we had been working. It also, in the past, supposedly had been a skeet shooting range. We're talking about right next to the helipad in this general area closest to the harbor. And so people just kind of asked, and they were wondering if things that could have been in the harbor, if maybe somebody threw batteries out, if those toxins could have washed down to the clams in that area. And so it was enough to spark curiosity. We will also be doing a project later on that's going to be kind of working its way down the beach just to see if there are heavy metals as we start working our way closer and closer to town, which is where we see a lot of people harvesting shellfish right now.
Okay, absolutely. And, you know, I'm wondering, we're talking about the beach. You know, even if you are not harvesting these shellfish, like, should any negative data that comes from this, like, alarm you? Like, if we find out that there's heavy metals, you know, in these shellfish, does that let me know, like,
you know,
I shouldn't walk on the beach?
That would need to be, once it got to that point, then we need to start going, okay, we need to reach out to some people who are a heck of a lot smarter than I am and say, okay, what does this mean? What does this mean for the general public? What does this mean for our children who could be playing on the beach? And they're going to be the ones who are going to help us set up some guidelines and really push information if need be.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Then let's keep it going. So we wanted to talk about Moldy Mondays. Tell me what this program is.
I sort of focus on the air quality aspects in our IGAP world. And I wanted to speak to Mr. Merritt, the grade four teacher, about an air quality related issue and come up with some curriculum to present to his students and work with his students on. And so I sort of listed off some of the things that I have learned a little bit about in the air quality realm. And sort of right away he said, mold and moisture. That's what I'd like you to talk about. And I said, okay. So I went back to the drawing board and kind of compiled what I thought would be age appropriate. And obviously I worked with Mr. Merritt because he knows his students well, about what they would be capable of doing, what we could challenge them with, and what would be maybe a little bit interesting to them. So I came up with, he allowed me to be there three different Mondays, and we just tagged it Moldy Mondays because it was easy to remember for the kids. And we focused on a few definitions, like what is humidity, what is a hygrometer, what is data, just at the beginning. And then we introduced the three locations. We had a hygrometer, which is a device that measures the humidity. We had one in their classroom. We had one outside there by the district office, and we had one in a jar that had an apple, part of an apple in it, and it was sealed. So for the next 2 weeks, the students had to record each day what the humidity and what the temperatures were in each of those three locations. And then the second Monday, I checked in on their data just to see how they were doing, and they were doing great. And that point, we focused on a little bit more about what causes mold to grow. And so we had Simon the spore. He's a mold spore. And so kids didn't know that there are mold spores everywhere. A lot of us don't know that mold spores are everywhere. And if the right amount of moisture is present, then they can germinate and grow on things. So we learned about that the second Monday. And then the third Monday, we collected the data, and they actually had to learn to graph. So Mr. Merritt was focused on sort of the science, but also the math involved with sort of basic XY axes and that sort of thing. So, and they did a really good job. I'd like to expand on it some more. And I thought it was fascinating when Kim was at a Healthy Wrangell Coalition meeting not long after that, one of the parents of one of those children was there and mentioned something about, oh yeah, we got to turn the fan on when I'm in the shower because we don't want to have extra moisture in the bathroom. And you don't get that feedback loop very often. And obviously we can check in with Mr. Merritt's class, but for them to tell their parents and then for that information to get back to us means, okay, we're doing some things right, at least, and hoping that we can continue that sort of education, outreach, and awareness in Wrangell because we're living in a rainforest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's great that you're informing these kids and they're informing their parents, you know, because they're constantly learning. They're in an environment where, yeah.
Absolutely.
They're exposed to people like you, and yeah. I wish we had a little bit more humidity, honestly. It's like, I feel like my nose is all parched. I'm just like, it's not good.
It just switched. And hopefully we'll see a bunch of rain and moisture in the next week or two. It's what it seems to be on the forecast.
Yeah, that'll be good for everybody.
It will.
Yeah. Okay. And then let's talk about one thing I want to mention real quick. We don't need to get into, but you monitor the 10-mile pipe. Thank you all for updating us on that. So every month that you all go out and do that, we let people know about it. And so as far as I know, for the month of March, the data results say it's all good.
Yep. When we went it through and did our sample, nothing showed up. So I think we sent you out the results. We'll probably be doing another heavy metal sample the end of this year. So our fiscal year, so probably closer to October. Mm-hmm. And then those results will also be released.
For heavy metals.
Heavy metals, PCBs, any kind of oil or grease that could be in anything that could have entered the water system that could be a health concern to people is what we're going to be testing for. But those ones we only do once a year. Okay. The coliforms we do monthly.
Okay, thank you. Yes. And just remind us real quick, coliforms, what are those? Why are they bad?
Coliforms, it's a type of bacteria, and for some, it's very, very bad. Usually the really young, the really old, or the sickly, they can have a hard time processing these type of bacteria, but they are natural in the environment. They're going to be all over the place. It's just a matter of how much is there and whether or not your immune system's able to handle it. So These cultivars, one of the ones that we test for is E. coli, which is usually the big one that we all hear on the news. Oh, it's E. coli. Oh, no. So, you know, and we've never had an E. coli spike. We have had coliform show present, and those ones show up pink on my little petri dishes, whereas if it was E. coli, it would actually show up as a dark blue. Mm-hmm. So in that, is we've been very lucky. I think people appreciate it, and we get a lot of feedback on it, and a lot of people rely on that water source, so we want to just make sure it's still available to them.
Good. Awesome. Well, thank you for doing that. Okay, and then let's go to some things that are coming down the road for you guys. We can start with the gillnet collection.
So our gillnet collection is a year-long project down at the cold storage facility. Off to one little corner of that, you see this large pile of nets, and it's hideous, I know, but you'll also see a blue sign that says, please deposit your gillnets here. And basically throughout the year, we go ahead and collect old gillnets that are no longer fishable. Mm-hmm. And the only thing, we do ask that people go ahead and strip off the corks and the lead line. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And the guys will just drop it off down there for us. And then usually about May or June, we'll get a crew and we go down there and we strip off anything that was left behind. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that it's a clean and pure product. From there, they get loaded into salt bags and they will be shipped down to Skagit Steel. And they actually melt them down and turn them into new products. Maybe flooring, tiles, those type of things. There's actually a company in Chile that when they melt theirs down, they turn it into skateboard decks.
That's cool. I remember you saying this. At first I was like, Chile, they make shoes. But no, it's skateboard decks.
It is.
Okay, cool.
Adidas makes shoes.
Okay.
And actually, I think Nike's picked up on it too. And so now they're also making their shoes out of recycled gillnets. It seems to be a good product and they're holding up. So.
Wow. Okay, cool. Yeah, and so this is something that you do year round. I remember talking to you about this, you know, around this time last year, maybe a little later. Is there like a spike when you get a lot of these?
Usually right before the season starts, we'll start to see, I don't know, maybe if regulations change or if they start, the more they look at their nets or think, oh, maybe we just need to get a new one. Mm-hmm. But that's when we start to see large piles showing up or people find them. And once the snow starts to melt away, maybe a net was left behind and somebody will drag it in for us and drop it off.
Okay. And then give me a sense of how much you all are sending south.
It's a lot. I actually went through and found all the numbers. So in 2018, we shipped out over 6,000 pounds of nets.
Cool.
So that's a lot of nets.
6,000 pounds.
And then 2017 and 2016, we actually did a combined shipment. So for those 2 years, we only shipped out once. Mm-hmm. And that was 10,000 pounds.
Oh, boy.
So these are, it's a net.
That's a lot of net.
That is a lot of net.
Yeah. That's a lot of pounds. That's a lot of just, yeah.
I think the big one for me on that is that the fishermen have fully jumped on board and they, I think, appreciate having a place to drop it. Before, the concerns were that they might end up in the ocean and be ghost fishing or in the dumpsters and then the public works folks have to struggle with them. And so it's a multi-beneficial program and it works because the fishermen take them there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so public works doesn't want to deal with it. And then... Yeah, ghost fishing. What does that mean?
It just means that there's some sort of fishing debris in the ocean that can continue to catch things, basically. So you could have fish or crab or all kinds of different critters that get stuck in derelict nets that either have been thrown in or fell off a boat or whatever. They end up there. Crab pots can do the same thing. So that's why it's important to us to try to get them where they belong and they get to become something really cool through this service that Skagit River Steel provides.
Mm-hmm. And where is that?
A company based out of Washington.
Okay, yeah. Okay, then let's go on to maybe one more thing before we wrap up the Stikine River water sampling.
This is an ongoing project that we started back in the fall of 2015. It's a project that is hosted by Tlingit and Haida in Juneau. We are assistants to them, and they've trained us to help with monthly water sampling. They got funding through the Bureau of Indian Affairs to do baseline water testing on the three main transboundary rivers, which are the Unic, the Stikine and the Taku. There have been some additions since then, but so from the beginning, we've tried to get up monthly on the Stikine to take samples, as well as get data such as, you know, salinity, temperature, dissolved oxygen, conductivity, and that sort of thing, as well as the heavy metals, because we want to know what is normal for the Stikine River. We have two locations that we go to. One is there at the USGS gauge, and the other location is up on Goat Creek, about 5 miles or so up from that. And the reason those locations were chosen is because there is some historical data there. So once we have a baseline, which is 3 to 5 years of data, we can then look, not we, Tlingit and Haida can look and see how that compares and see what the Stikine River is doing and what's sort of normal for that particular water body.
Okay, absolutely. So this is, a lot of people are involved in this.
Indeed.
Yeah. So the Bureau of Indian Affairs is handing over the money, and then Tlingit and Haida is working with you guys.
Yeah, the local tribes. They've done Taku sampling. They haven't been able to get up on the UNIC yet. It's very hard to access. And we don't have every month of data from the Stikine, of course, because it freezes in the winter. So we have a bit of a data gap for the winter months, pretty much November through March. So that's something that they would like to try to fill. So we don't really have 3 to 5 years of data at all yet, because we want to try to figure out how we could access the Stikine in the winter, which is a huge risk management and logistical challenge, as you probably know. So our next event, I think, is set for April. And so we'll be heading up. And if things open up prior to that, then we might schedule, and they would probably book through our local charter company, and we would maybe be able to get up earlier, which would be great to have that one extra month.
Yeah, absolutely. Remind me, how long have you been doing this?
We started in November of 2015.
Oh, boy.
So we were very lucky that first year, and we ended up with samples all 12 months in a row, and then because the Stikine did not freeze fully that year. So after that, each winter, it's been freezing, so we've had those data gaps.
Okay. And then, you know, tell me again, what are the things that you're testing for?
Well, that's all the science stuff that I've learned.
Selenium?
We do dissolved metals, methyl mercury, hydrocarbons, total sulfate, alkalinity, suspended solids, ammonia, pH, and organic carbon. So those are the chemistry things that have to be handled very carefully so we don't contaminate our samples that are sent to the Anchorage lab. And then we do with our YSI meter, the meter that goes into the water, it takes checks salinity, temperature, dissolved oxygen, and conductivity.
So conductivity. Yeah. Tell me, what does that mean, or why are we looking at that?
That's a very good question. To me, it's all part of the whole puzzle with what they have looked at before and what the water's doing now.
Okay.
So that would be a question for Kathy, our biologist, really.
Okay.
But it's an interesting process to have learned, and the specificity with which we have to collect those samples. Yeah, it's the rubber gloves and the don't breathe on the sample, and it's all these things that could possibly impact it. So it's a commitment we make to go up and want to make sure we bring back the right water samples to be sent up to the lab so we're consistent from month to month.
Okay. And then for this, you know, the effort is just to get this this data.
The baseline,
this baseline data, you know, how does that data inform people? How is that data being used at this point?
Right now, it's not. It's not even really public yet, because we don't know what is normal. We can't say, oh, the Stikine River is high in methyl mercury. We don't know that yet. Until you can compare multiple years of data, you don't know what's normal, because there could be a natural spike in any of those things. Mm-hmm. And so by checking it over a period of many months and years, then we see, okay, generally, this is what's normal, quote unquote, for the Stikine River water. And from there, we can know if things are changing over time in the future.
Okay. And then, so you've been doing it since 2015. I guess at what point would this become like a full body of data?
Again, 3 to 5 years, and I don't know how strict they'll be about the winter sampling. Like, I don't know if they'll say, we've been doing this for 5 years. Yeah. We don't have 4 months of November, December, January, February, March. So would they consider it complete, or would they hold off and wait until we could figure that out? I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But this is exciting. Yeah.
It is exciting. A lot of people are concerned about the transboundary mining that's happening up in British Columbia. And so getting this baseline data can be incredibly valuable for potential future concerns or events.
Yeah, exactly. I can only imagine how many people would want to have access to that data. You know, all these different environmental groups, you know, I know that all the tribes are very concerned about, yeah, that issue. I'm sure the mining companies want that information. Okay, well, that's cool. So we can wrap it up, but just give us a sense of anything that is coming in the near future. Go ahead.
Okay, on March 23rd, we are hosting our e-waste event. This is going to be the last event until 2021. So if somewhere hiding in your closet you have computers, monitors, any kind of electronics, please bring them down to the Cultural Center between the hours of 10 and 4, and we will go ahead and get things processed for you so they can be shipped south and recycled. We are going to be in and out of the Cultural Center for the next week, helping different commercial entities get their products loaded up. Today, we need to send out a huge shout out to the high school tech class, because they actually helped us unload all and reload all of the electronics that actually came out of KSDK. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
They were a great resource. The amount of work that they put in from 1 hour would have taken us days.
Absolutely.
And it also gives them, again, the hands-on, okay, my computer just doesn't disappear when I'm done with it. There's a long process that goes to making sure that that computer is properly dealt with and doesn't just go into a landfill. So we had a really good time with them today, and they're a great group of kids.
Absolutely, yeah. And they got to see some old stuff today. Some reel-to-reel players and, like, oh, my gosh, old computers.
And they were very interested in all of it, wanting to know what this was. And Matt Gore, he knew what every one of them was. Oh, this is a da-da-da-da. I'm like, how did you know that?
I'm like, Matt, you're not that old. Come
exactly.
on. He just knows things.
He does. And, they had a good time with that. And I think they're going to have a good time for the rest of the week going ahead. And some of these things we will disassemble. So they'll be able to really kind of get a hands-on feel
really?
Of what some of these different body parts on these computers are and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it's fun to smash things.
There's no smashing involved. That's funny. Aww. The kids said the same thing. Oh, we get to smash stuff.
Okay. Oh. Well, I don't feel as bad if the kids said it, too.
Nope, we will be going at it with screwdrivers and nicely taking things apart. We don't want sharp edges.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes. Yeah, let's keep everybody safe.
Yes.
Okay, and then I know that there's a meeting Thursday.
There is a meeting Thursday. We are working with the Southeast Watershed Coalition, and we're going to be doing a presentation for the Friends of Pat Creek. Mm-hmm. We're all going to be kind of going over different projects that we've had out there. So hopefully getting ideas and inspirations from other people in the community who enjoy that area. You know, we want people to come down and stop in and give us ideas and what they like to do there, what they would like to see out there. And
yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, and I think that starts at 6 on the 14th in the Nolan Center classroom.
Definitely. Okay. Well, I will be there, so I will see you. Okay, Kim and Chris, thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having us, June. It was great to share some of the stuff we work on.
Absolutely. Ditto. It was good to hear it. And thanks for taking our stuff today.
We took your stuff happily.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay. All right. You've been listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. As always, we will be back next Tuesday at 1 o'clock with another guest. Bye.